Coming to you from the HagmanReport.com studio, located in the Keystone State, birthplace of a mighty nation, it's your host, Doug Hagman.
And welcome to Hagman. It is the Hagman Report for today. Folks, it is Wednesday, the 10th day of June, 2020. I wish we all had 2020 hindsight. Maybe not, though, to see this where we're at today when a woman, and I'm not making this up, a woman complains to Webster's Dictionary and single-handedly causes Webster's Dictionary redefined the word racism. I don't know what else to say. Eric the Tech, help me out here. How you doing?
Doing good.
But seriously.
Redefine the word.
Yes.
Do you have the before and after definition?
Well, okay. Yes. This is actually what I have is a compilation of things from Twitter and from.
Can I buy a vowel?
I can arrange a few vowels and consonants to make a couple of words about what I think about this. But the dictionary, now this is from KMOV4, Channel 4, okay? Now the dictionary defines racism as a belief that race is the primary determinant of human traits and capacities, and that racial differences produce an inherent superiority of a particular race. Okay.
Is there a definition for that definition?
I consider myself a reasonably intelligent guy. I really do. And for those of you who want this sped up, this hour sped up, you know what? Change the freaking channel. If you think it goes too slow. The reason I go slow is so people that don't have your intellectual superiority, apparently, so they can understand. You'll know. Seriously, I don't mean to complain. Yeah, I do. I do mean to complain. I'm complaining, not against the people who are listening and watching the show. There's a certain expectation. And I'm so tired of this. You know, if you can't contain it to a limited number of characters, including spaces, you can't say it. You can't write it. I guess you can't write it. Or if it's not compiled in a sound bite, it doesn't get the play. I'm really upset with people who live and die by sound bites, by character limitations, I've got to put your program on 1.5 speed just to get the information. Well, you know, there's such a thing as soak time, intellectual soak time. So instead of just hearing information, you have time to soak it in. Why do you think we bring guests on more than once? And they say certain things more than one time. Why do you think when you went to school, depending on the decade of your schooling, why do you think the professors and the teachers, why do you think that they spent so much time on certain aspects of certain subjects? Well, it's because it's the way the mind operates. And the reason I get fired up about this is because I believe this is part of the problem today where we don't have that understanding. We hear something. Oh, it might stick in there. Just, I don't know how long. It might just kind of hang in there for a while. It creates an impression. I'm not saying it's accurate. And then it's gone. Why? Because of the intentionally fast-paced, you hear it. Look, you hear it on the news. You see some of these talk show hosts, especially the agenda-driven talk show hosts, just, you know, slamming all kinds of information, Which is, it's not a bad thing necessarily if you intend to listen to it and re-listen to it and then, but there is intellectual soak time, I believe that, that's what I call it. I don't know if anyone, what you call it, but so, because, and here's the thing. By not doing so, this is what we get. This redefining racism. The, in my view anyway, when people do, just again, live and die on sound bites and character limitations and social media posts and these fast talking radio, personalities. And they just, the information just goes out there like a kind of like a flash and it's gone. And it's never repeated. It's never reinforced. It's never backed up. Well, that leads to, I think, quite a bit of not misinformation or disinformation, although it does, but lack of understanding. And we all, you know, we're all spiritual beings, well, at least most of us, depending on what spirit you have. So, and we're all intellectual. We have a certain intellectual capacity, and that's different with each one of us. So, you know, to those people who say, well, it's a slow-moving program. Well, God bless you. I'm glad, you know what? I'm glad that you've got this intellectual superiority over others. Move on. But I argue it's that mindset that contributes to exactly to this. We have to redefine racism. Okay, let's do it. Yeah, let's
Whoa.
Do it.
Whoa, you're talking too fast.
Yeah, let me slow down. Yeah.
That's not to say that there's no good fast talkers out there, because there are.
Oh, you know what? No, believe me, there are. In fact, on our own network, there are. Yeah, absolutely, there are fast talkers. But I, and
some people have the gift to talk fast.
There's the difference. And, you know, a man must know his limitations as well. And I'm a firm believer in that. Clint Eastwood, a man must know his limitations.
And there's a difference between a teleprompter reader
that talks
fast and a private investigator that talks slow.
That's right.
That brings you better info.
Well, better? Oh, thank you. Thank you. Just because you're my son-in-law, I mean. But no, I appreciate that. And again, I'm not trying to make excuses for me or anything. I'm looking at a series of events that have taken place, a series of results. Again, this redefining racism. I guess I should finish that. This woman said, I basically told them, meaning the dictionary people, they need to include, and listen to this, they need to include that there is a systematic, that's her word, oppression on people. A systematic oppression on people. I would, in my mind, I would say of people, but okay, we'll go with on people. But what do I know? There's a systematic oppression on people. Again, I would say of people. It's not just, I don't like someone. It's a system of oppression for a certain group of people. This by recent college grad. No surprise there, huh? Kennedy Mitchum. Yeah, there are pictures out there.
Which system is he talking about?
It's a she, by the way. That's an assumption. You know what? I better not make that assumption. It looks like a she. Maybe they should redefine all of the pronouns too while they're at it. What was your question?
You threw me off.
Yeah, I know. I threw myself off.
What system is she referring to?
Well, it's
public system or the government system?
It's the whole system. I believe it's the whole system. I mean, if I'm reading this correctly, and I read it slow and I read it multiple times, not sure I understand this. But see, again, we just read it fast and it sounds good. Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Wait a second. It's kind of like the difference between a reaction and a response. Believe me, there are things in my life when I was younger I would react to. I mean, you throw a punch. I mean, let's do it. Let's do it. Reaction. Something happens to you and you react, or something happens to a member of your family. You react. We react, right? Someone hits your car. Boy, you're out of your, man, you are out of that driver's seat and you're back there swinging your arms. It's reaction. Or someone does you wrong. Do you react or do you respond? I was big on reaction before, but I'll tell you what, response has it beat. You have to know the difference. Because when you have the time to assess and the planning and, okay, now I see. And there's a process of evaluation. And this goes for all of us. I believe this goes for all of us, especially in the times in which we find ourselves today. Are you going to react or are you going to respond? There's a big difference. Now, sometimes you are compelled to react depending on the severity of the situation. Other times, a reaction is not necessary at that point. Again, I go through my own personal life and I can go back and I can see when I reacted and when I responded. And I'll tell you what, responding is a lot different and it has a lot better benefits. So just throwing that out there. But anyway, back to this definition. The story goes a few back and forth emails. The editor of Merriam-Webster Dictionary agreed and wrote back, while our focus will always be on faithfully reflecting the real world usage of a word, not on promoting any particular viewpoint, we have concluded that omitting any mention of the systemic, notice there's a different, that's different than systematic, any mention of the systemic aspects of racism promotes a certain viewpoint in itself. So by omission, by omitting the fact that there is a systemic aspect of racism, promotes a certain viewpoint. Think about that for a second. Now, again, to those who really want this to go, you're going too slow. Move on. Others, think about that for a second. I'll read it one more time, and then I'm going to bring, then we're going to go to our guest. While our focus will always be on faithfully reflecting the real-world usage of a word, not on promoting any particular viewpoint, we have concluded that omitting any mention of the systemic aspects of racism promotes a certain viewpoint in itself. Again, give that time to soak. And think about what that means. Think about it. And put your answers, put your comments in the YouTube section on our channel. By the way, do me a favor, hit like and subscribe as well. Hit the thumbs up and subscribe. That does some things that puts our videos out there for other people to be exposed to. So it's a good thing. People that otherwise would not be seeing this. So I just wanted to bring that because there's so much more going on in the news. Obviously, there's unrest everywhere. And there is, very sadly, there is, of course, this deep state, high-level military on the military and civilian side of the military, part of the military-industrial complex, who are actively attempting to unseat, if not temporarily, to unseat Donald Trump as president. As we speak today, using perhaps, among other things, the 25th Amendment, as Stan Deo just said yesterday, against him. All right, let's bring on Dr. Richard Proctor, my apologies for taking too much time. Dr. Proctor is an expert on the Constitution. He's written Saving Our Constitution. Go to provisinstitute.com. That's provisinstitute.com. There you'll find all of his works. But however, if you're listening to this broadcast, perhaps it's your first time listening to Dr. Proctor. Maybe it's your fifth time. Maybe it's your second. Who knows? If you don't have Saving the Constitution, I ask you to grab a hold of that book. Buy it. Go to provisinstitute.com. The link will be in the program description box, as always. But there it is on your screen. And get that. It's going to give you an entirely new appreciation for our Constitution. And in fact, it should be required reading for listening. But that aside, let's... Dr. Proctor, how are you, sir?
Good. You know, I was listening to your
my rant?
Diatribe.
Yeah.
Yes, on words, on word definition. Let me give you an idea here, another idea. Right. I don't know how come I get my picture up here so much bigger than yours. I'd like to be more your size. But anyway.
You're a bigger guy.
Here we go. The word militia.
Yes.
I received an email, and the writer said, I'd always felt all references to militia were bad. Until now, when I begin to realize that the Constitution calls for it, and maybe there's some good in militia after all. And you know, that is a problem because they've been portrayed as such bad people. Movies, everything portrays militia guys as bad. It's not true. Militia is the most valuable source of defense we have in this country, especially today. I mean, if we don't organize our communities into something, we will be rampaged. They will come destroy things. I listened to a guy talk about what happened in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. And the bottom line, he said, it didn't happen because somebody came. It happened because they were prepared in case somebody came. They were prepared. They knew what to do. And they did it, and it worked. And those people went away without having caused any difficulties at all. They would have rampaged through the town. But that city was prepared. Is your city prepared? Are you prepared for what may come your way? If it doesn't, so much the good. But if it does, wouldn't it be better to be prepared? And to be prepared just means forming an organization called the militia under the constitutional rules. And that works. Do that. Use that term. Do it constitutionally. I mean, it's not really tough. The Constitution says that we take an oath. Article 6, paragraph 3 says we take an oath to support the Constitution. Government officials take oaths to support the Constitution. Okay, those people should be taking that oath seriously. Go down to the state level. If the county, the state, the federal government won't do anything to help you have your protection of your community, then you do it. Get people down, register, give them authority to act. Your police department can help. They're not enough to do anything to this group that will come, but they're enough to orient the group that's going to protect the city called the militia. And it can be done. One city has done it. Maybe some others are doing it now. But is your city prepared for the problem that may come? And that's the question. And, you know, the word militia is not a bad word. It's how it's been connotated today. It's how it's been referred to. It's how it's been characterized. Well, let's recharacterize it to something that is valuable to us, as it was prior to the Civil War. You know, the Civil War was fought with militias. Revolutionary War was fought with militia. War of 1812 was fought with militia.
Interesting.
Why don't we have them today? Because the government doesn't do it anymore. Well, then if they don't do it, then you should, because the government doesn't care about your city. They care about their image, their political situation, all that kind of stuff. And if they do send the troops, government troops, you always have to worry, will they go away? The Patriot Act hasn't gone away. Patriot Act is still among us, and they're still persecuting us whenever we try to get on a plane in many other places. And all of that occurred because people didn't rise up when the time came and say, this isn't right. You don't have authority to do that. And they did not, by the way. They did not have authority to do the Patriot Act. They did it anyway. And today we're still suffering because we did nothing. We did nothing. Well, today we have insurrectionists rampaging all over our country. Are we doing anything? Are we just sitting back wringing our hands? Oh, well, oh no, there's these people who want to do away with police forces now because there's been police brutality. Well, I don't know. What about the criminal brutality that will occur since the police aren't there to do anything about it? And most policemen are good men and women. They're not brutal, but they're tarred with the same brush by these insurrectionists that are absolutely consciousnessless. In other words, have no conscience. They just come in and beat us about the head and shoulders. They say what one of the city councilmen said in one of these towns, he said, well, they should protect themselves. How? I've got a gun. I'll shoot once or twice, but there's 100 coming. What do I do now? But if I had a militia, there'd be 100 here, and those 100 wouldn't come because they're cowards. They won't come where there's a problem. Just like criminals don't go where there are guns. They go to gun-free zones, you know, killing zones. That's what they really are. Gun-free zones are killing zones. Why? Because they know there's no guns there. So they're protected, and they know you're vulnerable. So gun-free zones should have been relabeled. All those signs should be relabeled to killing zones because that's where the criminals are going to go to kill.
Boy, you're right on the money. You're right on the money.
Do I talk too fast? Maybe I should slow. No. I'm going to talk like I talk because that's how I get my stuff done. If I don't talk like this, I won't get done.
The reason I started out with that is because I've been just inundated with people, you know, sending me to Twitter, and these small sound bites and people saying, you know, you really need to see this or that. And I'm thinking, okay. And then at the same time, people saying, well, you talk too slow, or it's a slow moving, that was a slow moving segment, which, you know, look, maybe I'm reacting to criticism, improperly. However, I do believe that a lot of our problems, especially among the people who are paying attention, is that we gloss over things too quickly. And, you know, had we responded to the Patriot Act applications and such and really had a conversation about it, and I know a lot of people did, maybe we wouldn't be in the position we're in now.
But, you know, what those lot of people did was sit around in their parlors saying how bad it was. And that's all they did.
True.
None of them looked at their constitution and say, how come you're taking on our constitutional rights? You're doing that? What's going on here? But nobody did that. Therefore, we lost them.
It's a very good point. And now that we've lost, it's a lot harder to get something back that you've lost or that they've taken than it is to never have it taken away from you in the first place.
Yes, absolutely. It's always tougher to get it back. It's always tougher. I got an email. I get lots of emails. I got another one. This is from a fellow named Mark Young, and he did an outstanding job of describing some of the things that are going on today. I'd like to just mention a couple of items here. He has a section, just a small section in this outstanding email, talking about the unconstitutional violations regarding COVID-19 lockdown and the people and the economy. And I'm just going to mention a few of his comments. Article 1 means people cannot be prohibited from peacefully assembling. Article 4 means people cannot be stopped for the purpose of inspection or of their health or forced to take supposed tests for some alleged virus or be forced to take a vaccine. Article 5 means that people cannot be deprived of their rights to go about their own business, to work, to travel, or otherwise exercise their God-given rights. Amendments 9 and 10. Federal government has no delegated power to even deal with health or medical issues, nor to order any lockdown of the people or the economy. Amendment 14 means people cannot be deprived of their rights to go about their business, to work, to travel, or otherwise exercise their God-given inalienable liberties without due process of law. Your rights are your property, and are we allowing these people by inaction? Are we allowing these people to destroy our rights? Yes, we are. I watch these people with masks on. They go around. I comment every time I see someone, I'm talking to them. You know that? I say to them, I die. That mask does you no good whatsoever. And they always say, yes, I know.
Well, take it off.
If you know, take it off. And if it's your business, if your job requires it, and in some cases it does, then, you know, you can always cut a hole in the mask so you can breathe. No, I don't know what you should do. Because, you know, you got to have your job. I can't say you got to do it against it. But you need to stand up to the employers and say, this is wrong. It's my right to not have to wear this. And stand up to these people. Don't just go mealy mouth around saying, well, they told me I had to do it, so I better, you know. I was going into a store here in Utah the other day, and a young man said, you can't come in this door. Now, he wasn't really a young man. Have you ever seen Burl Ives? He was about the size of Burl Ives, okay? And he says, you can't come in this door, and stood right in front of me. So I walked right up to him and took a hold of his arm and says, what do you mean I can't go in this door? I can go in this door. I can walk. There's no problem. Yeah, but you can't. This rules of this coming. You can't go in this door. You have to go there. I don't want to go there. This is where I want to go. And we stood there and argued like that back and forth for about 5 minutes. And he's a big dude. And I said to him, you know, we're not standing 6 feet apart. He says, yeah, and I don't like that any more than you do. Oh, no, I don't care. I said, I don't care. I think it's fine. We should all be less than 6 feet apart. In fact, we're really close, aren't we? Finally, I just said, okay, guy, you stood up for your job good enough, and I know your back's up, so I'll go use the other door. But know this, that I'm only doing it because you're doing your job, so I will take my part, because I don't want to argue with you about this. This is just fun to do. You're doing a good job doing your job, even if your job is wrong. Anyway, that's what I did. We had a good chat, he and I. He chuckled, I chuckled. Nonetheless, I got my point across. Some people tried to come out the door that they were supposed to. They couldn't get out because we were standing in the way. I says, you know, we better get out of the way. These people want to use the door. And by the way, where's the 6 feet? Oh, no, we're in trouble. Oh, I have a good time, you guys. I have a good time.
You know, I think there's something inherently problematic with and inherently evil with what's going on. not just the social or not just the distancing. I don't like the word social, the physical distancing, but the, you know, the lines on the aisles, you go this way, because of the ruse or with the ruse of this, virus. I don't like what's going on. I don't like the programming of individuals, and the people just go along with it as if, well, okay, you know, I have to go along with it. So I give a lot of credit to you. My question is now, if you had a dozen people behind you doing the same thing, That Burl Ives kind of guy would be rethinking his.
He would be rethinking his position. By right. myself, I made a big noise, but if I'd had 10 more with me, I'd have really made a noise.
Yeah.
They would, all of us would have made a noise. That's the problem. We have individuals doing things, but the group doesn't. Now, you talk about the arrows on the floor. Guess who walks wrong? Every time I see one, I walk wrong.
Yep.
And nobody cares. They just move out of the way as they're walking the proper direction.
I think there are people
walking into the stores today that if the item they want is right in front of them, but the arrow points wrong, they'll walk clear around the store to come in and go down the aisle properly. I believe there are people that are so uninformed about life and so conditioned and so brainwashed that they'll actually do that. Now,
yep.
I'm not going to.
I watched, this is a couple of weeks ago. My wife doesn't let me go in stores because I cause trouble. And they kick me out or I get mouthy and it just, you know, it doesn't end well. So, a couple of weeks ago, I was in a grocery store. It was a big chain store. Not a store I usually go into. I can't even remember why I was there, but there was, inside the store was a pharmacy. In this pharmacy, there was this, you know how they snake the lines, you know, through using, the expandable tape or whatever. They make lines. In other words, they put posts up and then they stretch something on the posts. So it's kind of like, you're waiting for an amusement ride. You go in, you know, one way and it just snakes and snakes and snakes. There was nobody there. Nobody there. No one in line at this pharmacy when I was there. And this guy came in and I Dr. Proctor, I mean, this is the honest God's truth. No one is at the pharmacy. He had a direct shot to the counter to where you, whatever, order pickup or whatever. He didn't do that. He went in the in section and walked and walked and walked and walked and walked and then went to the counter. I'm thinking, it just blew me away. I'm thinking, man, you know, are
it's
we
like
that
an
far gone?
Farm.
Yeah.
What you're supposed to do, and they have a lot of those in theaters and places like that. If you notice the post, they've got a little thing that you can lift the it's expandable. You can lift it up and then go through it. But guess what? I've lifted a lot of those up. Then I go through, turn around, and put it back again. Walk through the next one, do it again.
Yep.
Oh yes.
Yep.
But the real thing is just go to the front. Just go to the front.
Yeah. I mean,
and go in the outdoor.
I guess I don't know. To me, that looked like the programming has been complete. When you're at that level. And look, I don't know what the story was with the guy. I don't know, but I just
thought he needed exercise. Maybe he was just getting exercise.
Maybe that was it. But I'm thinking, you know, I would have just, I mean, no one's in the line. He's just straight line, bang, you know, 6 feet. He walked 60 to get 6 feet. Anyway, yeah, you're right. But I saw that and it just reminded me of how programmed we are individually and collectively programmed that we are. To accept things that we don't have to accept and we shouldn't accept. And you're right. And I give you a lot of credit. And one last thing, Coach Dave Dobmeier, who we all talk about this and this is one of the things that's perhaps the most frustrating in our communities, where no one wants to take the baton of leadership. Now Coach Dave does. I certainly would toss my name in the hat to lead this. What would you call it? To lead whatever.
Civil disobedience.
Okay.
That's what Thoreau did. Civil disobedience.
Okay.
That's the key. You don't do anything bad. You just do what you want to do. And it's usually against what the government wants you to do. And sometimes against what the company wants you to do. You've got those lines in the airports. They get up to the counter, huge things you're supposed to walk through. And I see people walking through them. I walk directly to the place.
Yep. Yep.
Directly. I just avoid all that stuff and walk directly up the counter. Nobody cares. I just do it.
Exactly. And it's, you know, it's, by the way, too, it's how you carry yourself. And I know that you carry yourself with authority and where people, you can't be meek and timid, I don't think. It's almost as if you belong there. So that's just my thought. But you had mentioned militia earlier. I did get an email from someone and I wanted to ask you about this before we got too far afield from militias. When we spoke last, I'm paraphrasing from this, so I apologize. What if the local municipalities will not allow you to form a militia? I mean, what if there is a prohibition to militias? And again, I'm paraphrasing the question, because it would seem to me, according to this emailer, that there would, you had to get some level of permission from the local or the local county or state government to form a militia to be recognized, I should say, as a militia. Is that true? And what happens if they say, we're not going to let you do that? That's the essence of the question.
Okay, that question has come to me also.
Okay.
And this is how I responded. If the city government won't allow you to protect your own property, then you must do it yourself. But get all the neighborhood together to do it. Sign an agreement within yourselves. Do that kind of a thing. You must protect yourself. If the city won't do it, then you've got to do it. Isn't this terrible that we're actually talking about the city won't allow us to exercise our own rights? They won't do it. We're actually talking about cities and derelict in their responsibility. We should immediately recall those people and put somebody else in their place. I mean, they're derelict when they do that. I know the federal government is derelict. That's their purpose. I know and I know a lot of the state governments are derelict. Look what that judge, governor did up in, I think it's Wisconsin. Derelict in her duty to protect the citizens of the community. This is not, you know, they take this, we're going to protect them from their from themselves because they might get a disease. Garbage. I'm going to go back to this is a good thing to use. Revolutionary War guys didn't stay home because they might get shot. They went anyway. Okay? They went anyway. And we have freedoms. Well, if we won't go outside because we might get sick, then we won't have the freedoms to go outside again. And there you have it in a nutshell. So if the city won't do it, then you've still got to do it. But you need to do it as a group, and you need to do it officially within yourselves, if nothing else. But you must have something to protect your city. Then when the people come and you protect them, then you go to the mayor and said, you wouldn't do this for us, but we did it. Now, are you going to do it right or not?
Obviously that's forcing their hand to respond to your actions. And I think that's the only way at this point. Most people, most locations, well, I shouldn't say most, a lot of locations are going to respond is by you saying, okay, we've done this. You either recognize us or, we're not going to back down, and we can't back down. I don't think any one of us should back down, because the alternative, as you said, the alternative is for each one of us to act individually or within our neighbors in kind of a, not a cohesive, perhaps, or more as cohesive as it could be, manner. And that lends to some things that,
Bad stuff,
right. So you are exactly correct. Go ahead.
Let me paraphrase something a little bit. If I go to the one person, I go to the mayor and the mayor will not do it, but it needs to be done, then I'll go gather a group of people and we'll go to the mayor. And if she still won't do it, we'll gather the local media and we'll have them come and focus on the fact that she won't protect her town or he won't protect their town. That's how you get it done. And if that doesn't work, then you've only got one alternative. But I think those steps should go first, because you need to get the community officially involved, not just a group of people. But if that's how, if it devolves down to that, well, then that's what you've got to do.
But you know, all those words are action words. See,
it
requires action.
Do something.
Right.
Yes. Do something. Do it as a community.
Right.
You know, if you're gonna try to defend yourself with guns as a community, why don't you go down to the mayor or the city council or whatever and say, look, you guys, we're gonna do this. You've got to help us do this. We're gonna protect our community. Get with it. And be voiceful. Don't say, oh, can we please do this? I would really like to do this. This is all right. Do you give us permission? Is this okay? Don't do that. Say, mayor, we're gonna do something. Let's get going. You gotta do it, guys. You gotta do it.
Yep.
Just sitting around mealy-mouthing doesn't get the job done. Again, I'm going back to the Revolutionary Soldiers. They didn't sit around mealy-mouthing. They got guns and shot British people, officers, British soldiers. They did. They shot them. Oh.
You know, and to think back, that's in our DNA, or at least in most people's DNA, or a lot of people. I don't know about most, but, you know, we've been so effeminized, if that's a word, men, real men. We have an absence of real men in this country. Men that have that Revolutionary War DNA in them, saying, no, you're not going to step on us. You're not going to tax us without, you know, representation. Yeah. You're not going to, whatever the case might be. So that's what we need. We need more men.
We have been desensitized.
That's right. We have.
Desensitized. We would not. Today, I'm afraid we would not have enough people to stand like the Revolutionary Soldiers did. I'm afraid we don't.
Yeah, and we're seeing that now. I really think that we're seeing that now, and I think a lot of this has been a beta test to see how many people or how much people we're going to take. And we're seeing that now when we have these police departments, which is just shameful, you know, falling on the members falling on their knees and faces. You got to be kidding me. All right. I mean, the FBI, same thing. You know, the optics of that group of FBI agents taking a knee, kneeling. I don't know where I'm going with this, but it's a different mentality.
We are losing our mentality of freedom. That's right. What we're doing. We're losing our mentality of liberty. And as we lose it, our liberties go away. All these things I read from those amendments that Mark Young has written here. He's done a good job. By the way, if anybody wants the entire email, it's absolutely outstanding. Again, email me and ask for Mark Young's email, and I'll send it to you. I'm sending a lot of stuff out.
You've been very responsive. I've been getting emails saying, hey, you know, Dr. Proctor actually responded to me. And I'm thinking, yeah, well, that's, he said he would.
I do what I say I'm going to do. I even answer the telephone. Some people are shocked. You answered the phone? Sure I did. Isn't that what it's for? Anyway, some people now are writing the email saying, send me everything you're sending.
And that's a good thing.
I do. But it's got to come as an email because I can't take time to write emails. I can't take time to write letters. I just say, here it is. And I click on the buttons to add it to the reply and send it back.
Correct.
I can't do it any other way. There's too many people asking.
I'm looking. I've got 76,463 emails. And that's just this year. So I don't know.
Yeah,
that's a lot. Catch
up. I haven't got that many. When those come, I won't be able to do these things I'm doing now. So do it now quickly while I still can. And by the way, that's the same thing about the book I've got. You know, we have 600 copies sitting here now because we ran out of the last 600 copies in a couple of weeks. So I've got another 600. Sometimes the books get delayed because so many people order them that I have to order new books. It takes me 2 weeks to get new books. And so sometimes I get some delays. I try not to. I try to get ahead. But please, if you're interested and you want a book, don't delay, because I've got the books here right this very second, and I can send them all out tomorrow. If I get orders for them, I can send them all out tomorrow.
Sounds good. And folks, take advantage of this. Go to Provis Institute. That's Provis, P-R-O-V-I-S, ProvisInstitute.com. Take advantage. Or get a copy of Saving the Constitution by Dr. Richard Proctor. Do it today. And while you're there, after you're done, well, even before, take a look at his other books as well. The Liberty series is, I just can't say enough good about it. I mean, I love that in-depth reporting, the in-depth evaluation of things. And I'll tell you, by reading the Liberty series, you'll be able to understand really who is behind and how we got to where we are today. And that's so important. But provisinstitute.com. Yes, go ahead.
That is the purpose of the book. So that people will know, the books, all six of them, so people will know who's doing it to us, how they're doing it to us, so they can understand what to do about it. You can't fight something you don't know anything about. You can't complain about something you don't know anything about. You can't complain about liberties if you don't know anything about them. You just can't. You don't know your liberty, you lose it. It's done.
Precisely. I kind of got off on a different tangent when we started. Perhaps it wasn't the area of interest that you wanted to kind of focus on today. So I want to open it up to you, Dr. Proctor, what you might want to focus on that you think is important. I mean, we've got our civil liberties that are being blown away, that are being taken away from us with our consent. You've got police departments. You know, I was going through the Constitution, the book, Saving the Constitution. Are police departments even?
They're not.
I didn't. Okay. The FBI especially, is that even?
Not even mentioned. It's not a constitutional organization.
Right. So,
you mentioned.
Okay.
If it's not, it's the Ninth Amendment that says it. No, it's the Tenth Amendment that says it. If there's something not mentioned in here, then it's a part of the states.
Okay.
It belongs to the states. If it's not mentioned in here, it belongs to the states. That's what the Tenth Amendment says.
So.
It doesn't say if it's not mentioned, go ahead and do it. It says if it's not mentioned, it belongs to the states.
So,
which means communities, which means people.
Right. So. It's not the fact that we'll say the FBI or federal agencies, they're a different animal altogether than, we'll say, municipal police departments. So it would be up to the state and constitutional for a state to have a group of individuals called a police department to conduct policing operations. That's consistent with the Constitution. Is that correct or not?
That's right. We must, a lot of folks get things mixed up. They'll say, well, the police department, that's unconstitutional. Wait a minute. The Constitution defines what's constitutional and what isn't by what's written in it.
Right.
If it's not in it, It belongs to the states. The states can do things. They can do stuff that the federal government cannot do because the federal government is precluded from doing it. Now, if the states do things that are inherently against your rights, and they do, then you have a responsibility, as it's stated in the Declaration of Independence, to alter or abolish that government. That's your responsibility. If they won't do their part and they're violating your rights, you have a responsibility, according to the founding document written in 1776, says you have a responsibility to alter or abolish that government. That's your job. Don't sit back and say, oh, they won't do. Go do your job. I know that's a vicious thing to say. I understand that. I understand I'm saying some things with force that perhaps we wouldn't want to do exactly the way I'm saying it, but we need to do them nonetheless, even if it isn't how I say it. We need to do them. I say it with gusto, so maybe someone might do it. If I say it mealy-mouthed, nobody will do it. I believe in the Constitution, but I also believe in states' rights, and I really believe in states' rights. And I believe in my rights and your rights, and I don't want them taken away.
Well stated. Well stated. I think there is a lot of confusion and a lot of misunderstandings, which is, again, which is why I advocate for the purchase, everyone listening to this, Saving the Constitution. And I really do, and I thank you for writing that book. What we're witnessing today, I think, we can describe it a number of different ways. And again, I don't know if there is something specifically, and I don't want to take away from anything specific you want to get into. But I don't know what we're witnessing today, because of your experience, because of your knowledge, we're seeing cities, we're seeing towns and communities acquiesce to these thugs. We're seeing this, wholesale subjugation of the Caucasian, you know, the white people of America by the minorities. We're seeing things redefined, laws being made where I don't think any need or I don't think there's any law that should be made. We're seeing things like Confederate statues coming down. I know these are all different events, but it's almost as if it's all part of a single puzzle or a mosaic of sorts. So having said all of that, from both a constitutional point of view as well as a personal point of view, what should we all be doing and where should we be looking and where should we be yipping the most and complaining the most? And again, feel free to go wherever you want to go in this conversation.
You're absolutely right. It is a jigsaw puzzle that's being put together, but it's not our friends that are putting it together. These people started, let's see, let me back up just a hair. The year 1776 was a pivotal year. Three things happened that are affecting us since then and are major items that affected our customs and our lives. One of those was the Declaration of Independence was signed. And that proclaimed our liberties. Okay? The other one was organized in May the 1st. It's called the Illuminati. And it was organized in Germany on May the 1st to destroy liberties. Now, I see Satan and God in those two pictures. The next thing that happened was a man named Adam Smith wrote a book called Wealth of Nations. Now, the title's longer than that, but that's what it is. And he wrote down all the stuff that he felt about economics. It's an absolutely excellent book about economics, but it can be used both directions. And Satan's using it, and God is using it, you might say. Us people that want liberties are using it, and people who want to destroy us are using it. So three things happened, pivotal year. So here's the Declaration of Independence, establishing our voice, saying we want liberty, okay? Then we wrote a constitution just shortly after the war was over. And the constitution was to write down how we were going to get the liberties that were outlined in the Declaration of Independence. That's the sequence, you see. Then some of those things were left out. Some things were there, but not stated specifically, the rights. So the anti-federalists, the ones who wanted states' rights, came in and said, we want to have these rights mentioned. And they made a list of them. And that we have today is called the Bill of Rights. And that came because people said the Constitution's not clear enough. We want to be clearer. So that codified the rights. Now, no one, the Ninth Amendment is a little difficult to really understand. So I'll just say it simply. Anything, any right that's not listed here is not, you don't, let me say it again. Any right that is not listed in the Bill of Rights is still effective. All rights aren't listed. If there's any right you have that's not listed, it is still a right. That's what the Ninth Amendment says in about 10 or 12 words. All the rights aren't listed, but you don't lose them because they're not listed. That's what that Ninth Amendment says. Therefore, we could have lots more than the 27 rights that are listed in the Bill of Rights. A lot more than that. And they don't cease. They don't cease. But we're now, where should we go from today? From today, we should learn. There's that word again, learn, action word, learn. We should learn what we are responsible for. The Declaration of Independence. I'm not sure you need to read all of the crimes that the king committed or England was committing, but you do need to read the first two or three paragraphs where it outlines the rights. And by the way, those two or three paragraphs are already listed in the opening foreword of the Saving the Constitution. Those paragraphs are there. So I listed them. I put those paragraphs in the book to introduce that part because that's what is the foundation of the Constitution. Now, all those people in the Revolutionary War era, they all read the newspapers. How about they didn't all read them, but they read them. People knew. If they did, they couldn't read, somebody else told them about it because they asked. They knew what that Constitution said before they ratified it. By Jove, they read it. Now, we today have neglected our learning needs. People say, well, I don't want to learn. Why are you always talking about books? Why are you talking about learn? Because that's where all the knowledge is. It's in books. Anyway, so we need to know those things. We need to know that history so we can see why things happen. If you don't know history, you're doomed to repeat it. That was said by one of our great speakers. If you don't know history, you're doomed to repeat it. I want people to know the history. That's why I wrote those books, because I couldn't say all those things in one time, so I had to write them down so they would be available for other people to see where I wasn't. And I expect them to outlive me, too. I expect people to still be reading these books long after I'm gone. And I'm going to go until I'm 1,000, so I expect a lot of people to be reading these things a long time. But anyway, see, so the idea here is we need to learn. Now, this came to my attention in another email that I received. A young lady said, why aren't you on the Tucker Carlson show? And I said, well, nobody's asked me to be on it. And they don't, who are you? They don't know me. They get all kinds of requests, so they're not going to ask me to be on the show. She says, well, there's one person that wants you to be on that show, and that's Jesus Christ. So I tell you what, you send a book, and he'll get the means to be on his show because you need to be there. I sent the book. She sent me another email. She says, you know, you got to be on his show. The last 2 days, he's been asking the question, what are we going to do? And she says, I'm shouting at the TV, get on the Tucker Carlson, get Proctor on the Tucker Carlson show. Get him there to help you know what to do. Anyway, so that's happened this week. I have sent the book. I'm looking for it. People don't know where to find what they want and what they need. Let's do something to have that happen. Now, did I just make a plug to get me on the Tucker Carlson show? I sure did. I need to do that. He's looking. I need to be there. I don't necessarily have to go every day or every week or every month, but I need to be there. The word needs to get out. We need to get this book out so people will understand that we have rights and that we need to protect them. But they don't know what they are because they've forgotten what that document, the Constitution, says. Please learn the Constitution.
You know, and again, when I started off my show, I was talking about the need for the teaching type element in these broadcasts, and you know, not just throwing words out there, but really understanding things. I truly believe, Dr. Proctor, what you just said, You made a case for really understanding what our rights are and what our Constitution has given us and has taken or limited the government that people are not understanding. I'm not sure I said that right, but you know what I mean. Folks, you're listening to the Hagmann Report. My guest is Dr. Richard Proctor. His website, provisinstitute.com. We're up against the top of the hour network break, Global Star Satellite Radio. Going to be right back with Dr. Richard Proctor. Stay where you're at.
Mainstream media won't. You're listening to the Hagmann and Hagmann Report on the Global Star Radio Network.
Welcome back. This is the Hagmann Report for today. With me is my very special guest, Dr. Richard Proctor. You know, we learned so much. During the break, we were talking about, just briefly, in the minute we had, we were talking about learning and what it takes to learn as opposed to hearing and not really learning anything. And that's, you know, that's really a, kind of a problem today. And I think that's intentional. And I think all of you would agree. I mean, look at Common Core. Look at the way the school system is, and has been set up. It's not the way it should have, or not the way it was, and certainly not the way it should be. It's all about learning. It's about the graduate level classes, I believe. But in order to get to that, you've got to really fully master your elementary and your junior and senior high. So anyway, that's just my thoughts on that. I've got a question for Dr. Proctor from a listener, and the question is about curfews. Okay, that here I'm going to ask him momentarily, and that's from a listener. Oh, we'll just call her. Her name's Donna. I'll just call her Donna Smith, I guess. How's that? So a question about curfews coming up. Before I get back to Dr. Proctor, you know, obviously you know that my family suffered a terrific loss over the last year, and of course, you know, my son passed away. And the upside of this, if there is any, he left an unborn son. Well, he was born after he passed away, and he's now 10 months old, or 10 months? Eric, am I wrong?
Around there.
Oh, my goodness. Anyway. You know, and there was, when you have children, when you have a family, or thinking about having a family, you've got a financial responsibility even after you're gone. Am I right? Yes, I'm right. I know, I realize that fact, and you should too. With everything going on right now, a lot of people are asking if it's even possible to buy life insurance. This is what I'm talking about. I'm talking about life insurance, about making sure your family doesn't suffer after you pass on. And you don't have to be the breadwinner, the person that makes the money. I mean, you could be a wife who takes care of the household. Believe me, I couldn't replace my wife. Okay, so anyway. But again, with everything that's going on right now, a lot of people are asking if it's even possible to life insurance at all, to buy life insurance at all. But the short answer is yes, it is possible. You can buy life insurance during a pandemic. You can buy life insurance during civil uprisings. And if your loved ones, depending on your income, you probably should. I'm telling you, you probably should. As an insurance marketplace, Policy Genius is in contact with the life insurance companies on their platform every single day. They're keeping track of all of the changes in the market so you don't have to. And believe me, that's a full-time job in and of itself, which means that they can get you covered quickly for the best price. Now, here's how it works, folks. Policy Genius compares quotes from the top life insurance companies in all in one place. It takes just a few minutes to compare quotes from the top insurers to find your best price. This doesn't save a lot of legwork. Not only that, you could save $1,500 or more per year by using Policy Genius to compare life insurance policies. I've seen this work in my own family. Once you apply, the Policy Genius team will handle all of the paperwork and red tape for free. So if you hit any speed bumps during the application process, they'll be there to take care of everything. And that's good to know. So if you're one of the people, one of the many people looking to buy life insurance right now, you're not sure where to start, head to policygenius.com, policygenius.com. Policy Genius will find you the best rate and handle the process completely. They'll get you and your family protected and hopefully give you one less thing to worry about. That's policygenius.com, policygenius.com. PolicyGenius.com, a tremendous company. And again, you know, I've seen this work with families close to me and even, you know, my family in terms of making sure things are taken care of after someone is gone. All right, Dr. Richard Proctor, ProvisInstitute.com. That's his website. You know, you can find a lot of great material there in terms of, look at this. See? Saving the Constitution. I don't think I've taken this far, 5 feet from my desk. With the exception of when I go out and with Lady the Studio Dog and read under the shade once in a while.
Every time I try and grab it, I get a ruler to the hand.
You're lucky it's just a ruler. People have lost limbs for less. Now, this book is – and, yeah, Eric the Tech, you've read this, parts of it. And
most of it, yeah.
I'm telling you what, it's irreplaceable. Saving the Constitution. That's ProvisInstitute.com. All right. I said I was going to ask Dr. Proctor a question. This is from a listener. We'll call her Donna Smith. Her first name is Donna. She writes this. I'm going to quote directly from the email. And thank you for having Dr. Proctor on your show. I'm learning a lot. I ordered one of his books recently. My question is this. Are curfews constitutional on any level of government? Parentheses, city, state, federal. Whether they are used during riot situations or not. And then there's a second part to the question. Just put this in your memory bank for later. If it would be possible, could Dr. Proctor explain the state's layered government a little bit? An example, the city's right, the city council, mayor, to govern versus the city, the city's right, in other words, city council, mayor, to govern versus the county and the county supervisors versus the state governor and the state legislation. That's a mouthful. Okay. Could a county override its city policy if they don't violate the state constitution? It gets a bit confusing with so many branches and entities. So there it is. There's the question. So curfews and then the bigger, expansive a question, multi-part question. Over to you, sir.
Good. Well, I think I'll go home now. No.
I'm checking out. I'm checking out right now.
Yeah. Let's talk about curfews first. Curfews and martial law, because they kind of go hand in hand.
Yeah.
The excuse is to protect you from the bad guy. It is not constitutional. Is that clear? Neither of those are constitutional. The federal government doesn't have anything to say about it. Remember the 10th Amendment. If it's not listed in the Constitution, it's a part of the state's rights. Okay, a part of the state responsibility. Not rights, but responsibility. So, curfews by the federal government are absolutely unconstitutional. Period. Curfews by the city are up to the city people. Curfews by the state are up to the state. Now, this is kind of a cop-out, but here's the answer. It's a really true one. They can't do that to you, and if they do, then don't elect them. You realize that about 90% of everybody who's incumbent gets reelected, no matter what they do while in office? That's the key. Get elected. You can stay forever. don't elect, don't re-elect someone who violates those rules. The representatives get re-elected every 2 years. Can't we remember for 2 years the things that they did that were undeclaration dependable? That's the word we want to say. Because the Declaration of Independence defines those things that the city is obligated to do, as well as the state, as well as the federal government. The Constitution is only federal government. So when people say constitutional, I say, no, the Constitution doesn't have anything to say about it, because it doesn't. But if it doesn't, then it's the state's responsibility. And if they don't do what they're supposed to, it's the people's responsibility to clean house. 90% of the people get reelected. That doesn't show any cleaning of house at all. We know Congress has a terrible popularity rate, or what's the word here? I'm trying to think of a word.
Favorability.
They have a terrible reputation.
Yeah.
We don't have confidence in them. Okay? And they got about 11%, but 90% of them get reelected. Huh? Why is that? Well, it's always this, my guy, he does right. It's always the other guy that's not doing right. Well, folks, your guy's not doing right too, but you're not paying attention. Even after 2 years, they all get reelected, even though they're doing things constantly that are against the rights of the Declaration of Independence. You see, that brings it down to the state level. But we're reelecting the federal guys, even though they violate the Constitution every day. Every day! They violate the Constitution today, and they're reelected tomorrow. We're jeopardizing our future because we're not proper citizens. Proper citizens take care of the government. We just sit back and say, well, they'll do it. No sweat. We don't have to worry about it. So the first question she asked was curfews. If it's done by the city or the community or by the state, it's got nothing to do with the Constitution. So it isn't constitutional or unconstitutional. If it's done by the federal government, it's unconstitutional. Now, if it's done by the city and it's against the Declaration of Independence, do something about it. Go en masse and tell them you're not going to put up with this. Go there. Have 100 people show up at the council meetings. 200 show up at the council meetings. They stop this. And they will, if enough people say something. But we are complacent. We're going to sit at home, watch the TV, and say, oh, maybe we'll pass me another beer. And we're not going to take care of what we need to do as citizens of the United States, and citizens of our state, and citizens of our city, and citizens of our county. We must look after these people. Democracy, freedoms, liberties, what did they say? Won't last a generation if we don't do something about it. Well, we're not today, and they may not last this generation. This group of people today, and what's going on, is violating everything we've got. Everything, every right we have are being violated. They're telling us how to live. They're telling us where we can live, how we can live. They're putting us in jail. And we're not doing anything about it. We're just saying, okay, slam the door. We're not doing anything about it. We've got to. We are going to lose our country right now. I'm not talking about next year, maybe perhaps. This January started the loss of our country in gusto, in spades. We are going to lose our country if we just sit there and say, well, that's too bad. We better do it. The government says it. We better do it. The government has no right to say anything that's contrary to the Declaration of Independence. Nothing at all. And the Declaration of Independence says these rights are God-given. That's what unalienable means. It means that government cannot take them away. That's what that means. That's what the rights are. But the government is taking them away. The state government is taking them away. The county governments, the local governments are taking them away. And we say, okay, we'll do it. That pretends that we won't have them later. We just won't have them. Our children are seeing us wearing masks, staying 6 feet away, and they're saying, well, my parents are doing it. It must be right.
Yes.
Teaching them.
Yep.
I see little kids. I'm sorry, I'm going to go to care. I see little kids that are 4 and 5 years old, 6 or 7 years old, wearing masks.
Yep.
Because their mother tells them to do it. Well, their mother is telling them to agree with rights agree with losing our rights. That's what their mother's telling them. It's okay. We can lose our rights. That's all right. We don't really need them. The government's telling us, and they're keeping care of us, and they're our parents, and so they're doing what's right. So we better do what's right too. So the kids are learning the government is always right. We're teaching them that. We're teaching the next generation. The next generation will not know anything about rights either. In fact, they'll know less than we do. If there is a next generation that's not slaves, because that's the world order, the new world order goal, is to make slaves of us, all of us. This email that I just mentioned from Mark Young tells the story very, very well. It's a long email with lots of excellent stuff in it. Wow. And it tells the story, guys. It tells the story.
That's one thing, Doctor, that I am very concerned with. The fact that we are on a rapid road to losing everything. It's an unwillingness to get involved and a willingness to concede all of the time. It's very frustrating for me, and I know it's Dave Dobmeier and others, you know, are saying, let's get together, let's do something. And people are not, I mean, some people are not on board. Others are, you know, let's do something. But I think, you know, I think in a sense, I can see where, as time is going down the road here, and as mentions of the 25th Amendment to unseat or take out Donald Trump prior to this election are gaining steam. I don't know whether you heard any of that. I can see where some people are starting to say, hey, wait a minute. You know, this is my line in the sand. This is enough is enough. Now, you know, you're going to see me rise up. In the burning of flags on suburban houses suburb of Chicago. People ordinarily out of the game voluntarily are now suddenly starting to say, wait a second. There's something wrong here. I need to get involved. So maybe they've pushed too far. I don't know. I guess I'm just talking.
Well, yes, we are getting to that point, but not enough of us are. There are just too many. I'm seeing people stopping wearing the masks. Well, that's good. But the reason they're stopping is because, well, other people are. They're not stopping because it's a right for them to not have to do it. They're not stopping for that reason.
Good distinction.
They're stopping.
Yeah.
But it's not the right reason.
Right.
And they don't get the right reason. That's why I keep saying over and over again, this book, Saving the Constitution, needs to be in every home in the nation.
I agree.
Not on the shelf, on the book, on the table, being read by the kids, by the parents, by everybody. Needs to be there.
Yep.
This book tells you what's wrong, what needs to be fixed in our Constitution. It's on purpose just for that reason.
Yeah, indeed it is. I cannot speak about this highly enough, Saving the Constitution. I would not have Dr. Proctor on such a regular basis if I didn't believe in this. And I believe in this. I think, to me, I believe that this is an answer. It's a blueprint for our response to what's going on and Saving the Constitution. It provides me with an understanding of what the Constitution says, where sometimes I look at it and think, what does that mean? Well, it's right here. Saving the Constitution, provisinstitute.com. All right.
Let's get back to Donna's question.
Go ahead.
We didn't answer it.
Right.
All we did was talk about curfews, and I got carried away talking about lots of things. But she said, what about states level? How does that work? What's organized there? And you know, really, that's a big question. That's a lot of stuff. So let me just say, carefully, what I think the answer to what you are asking is, Donna Smith. It'll really be something that is really her name, Donna Smith, won't it? Anyway, the federal government oversees some very important items, international things. They're supposed to oversee our borders. They're supposed to oversee our relations with other countries. They're supposed to take care of maritime, things that happen on the oceans. That's their job. That's their place. The states Their place is to take care of the people within their jurisdiction, in accordance with what the Constitution says in the Bill of Rights and the Constitution itself. But they have their own constitutions, and as I read others, they seem to be parodying the federal Constitution, and that's good. I like that. That's good. The states have a responsibility to make sure that the Constitution is followed within the borders of their state. Federal Constitution and the state constitutions. State constitutions outline the kinds of things that the government's responsible for. These are for broad items. Again, it's the land of the state, the mining, the use of the land. The BLM is not supposed to be there. It's supposed to be a state organization that monitors the use of the land within their state. The BLM has no rights whatsoever to be in any state in the country. They have no right to exist. Neither does the Forestry Service. Neither does the Fish and Game Department. They have no right to even exist, let alone dictate to us what we can do on our lands. They're called public lands, but they make them unpublic. They make them governmental lands.
Public lands. Can I stop you right there? Because I know I can see the emails coming in. You're telling me, and thank you for saying this. You're telling me, though. You're telling all of us. Bureau of Land Management, hey, that doesn't even have a right to exist.
That's right. It doesn't have a right to exist.
Okay. I love this. Why does it then? Because we let it, I know, but by which mandate, statute, how does this exist? Well, help me understand why it's there, for example.
You know, again, it's in my books. The volume, the Liberty series, it's in the book. All the details about what you're talking about.
Yep.
Even the details about how they came into existence unconstitutionally. Okay?
Yep.
And we let it happen. What is that also that we don't know is that the federal government has deeded several of those sites that are unconstitutional for them to even own. They've deeded them to the UN. So there you have even another layer. And we let them do it. We let them do it. Here's an example of overreach. I'm trying to say it right. Yellowstone Park, Yellowstone National Park, big park. Some of Montana, some of Wyoming, big park. All right, now here we go. We deeded that quietly to the UN. It's called a heritage site, you see. Then the UN decided that they had to protect the animal life within the park. The UN decided this. So the UN decided that we're going to control the land outside of the park. And I think it's like 16 million acres outside of the park, around the park, that they're controlling. And they've closed businesses that are interfering with the animal life around Yellowstone Park. And we let them do it. We're allowing the United Nations to control our land. Hey, Article 1, Section 8, Paragraph 17 says very bluntly, the federal government can own only one place, Washington, D.C., and they have to get permission from the states that went over, but they do have that authority, Washington, D.C. They can erect forts and other means of defense of the country in states if the states give them permission and if the government pays the state for doing it. And that's the end of the government's right to land, period. There is no more. It's very clear. Paragraph 17, very clear. Again, it's in the Saving the Constitution book, outlined what's going on there. What they've done is they said, oh, wouldn't it be nice to have a park? Wouldn't it be nice to preserve these things? And yes, we say, yes, it would be nice to do it. So the federal government did it. No. It would be nice to do it. So the state should do it. That's how it's supposed to happen. That's the state responsibility. Now, that's a geographical area, the boundaries of the state, and they're well delineated. So now, what's the next layer? The next layer is another geographical area called a county. Counties conduct the elections. That's one of their responsibilities. They have the sheriff. It's a county sheriff. That's the law enforcement within the county. The sheriff has the opportunity to get posses and deputize those people to work with him in controlling problems within the county. But that's still a very large geographical area. But that's his responsibility. And that's the county's responsibility, that larger geographical. Now we run into a smaller geographical area, and that's called a city, community, a local place. That also has geographical limits. But some places in the county are not in a city. So the people say we want to be a part of the city, so we'll be a part of that community. Well, folks, here's a little piece to think about. A corporation is always owned by somebody. A city that's incorporated is owned by somebody. The unincorporated areas are owned by the people who own the land. The city has control over their land when they're incorporated. Not complete control, but they have control. Some of these people on the COVID-19 stuff have tried to say, even if it's not in our city, we're going to control it. No, I'm sorry, you're not. Okay, so those unincorporated areas are actually the only areas that the Bank of England doesn't own. And you want to give it to them still. Okay, anyway, Bank of England ultimately owns all of this through the corporate structure that was put in place in 1870 or 71, one of those 2 days. So now we've covered that. We talked about the ownership of the land. We talked about that last week. It's in volume 2. First part, 10 pages, talks about how that all came about, how that corporation came about. Now the land came about.
Right.
Go ahead.
And I don't mean to interrupt, but yet here I am interrupting. In volume 1 of the Liberty series, just want to show you, to address something Dr. Proctor said earlier, Appendix 4, Federal Agencies That Shouldn't Exist. Now, this is an article by Christopher Eastwood, but it's entirely there along with every agency. It goes from A to Z, and it is a long list.
And it's 2006. It's 2006. Yep. What's happened in the last 14 years beyond that list?
Exactly. So the importance, I guess I said that to say this, the importance of really understanding at the deeper levels through the Liberty series. Oh, man. You know, I really think if everyone got the Liberty series as well, 99.9% of your questions would be answered about how we got here and what we need to do to take it back along with saving the Constitution. But I digress. I didn't mean to interrupt, but again, I did because this is, again, one of my favorite series. So go ahead, sir.
Anyway, that's what's all written for. You'll also find other tables, membership of organizations that are subversive. You'll find stuff about the come on, Richard, think of the word, standard of living, the problem of free trade and the standard of living. That's going to be listed in them. Well, the appendixes have lots of nice things in them. Anyway, also, there's a game in one of those books. I think it's in volume 1, but I don't remember exactly. Sometimes I don't remember. It takes Monopoly. Maybe it's in the bathroom economics. It takes the game Monopoly and turns it into a central bank area, plus the regular banks, plus the players, and shows how all the money goes to the Federal Reserve, the central bank. It's a very fun game to play. You just take the Monopoly board with a few new rules. They're all listed. You got to have more money. So I recommended that you get 5,000 note bills, 10,000 note bills, because you don't have enough money in there. And it shows how inflation works. It shows how all that works and how all the money goes through inflation back to the wealthy. It shows it. It's just an adaptation of the Monopoly game. Use the Monopoly board and have a good time. But anyway, those are the things that are in these books, not just boring stuff. But anyway, so now we're back to the county, the county level. They have a geographical level. Now the city levels, they have a geographical area. You notice where we've gotten to, right down to what's called the grassroots. The grassroots control the city. Now, there's a problem that I discovered when I got into and when I visit the county, the city councils. And I talk to them and they say, you know, I say to the council, you shouldn't be doing this. And they say, yeah, but it's mandated by the state. I'm sorry. The state does have jurisdiction over it, but they don't mandate. If it's violating the Constitution, it's color of law. It's not mandated. But nobody even knows about the color of law. I have to admit, I did not know about that either 6 weeks ago. But I sure do now. I see it going on all the time. Color of law. Organizations in government assuming rights they have and taking away rights of citizens through the color of law, which means they're violating their oath of office. They're violating their direction. They're violating their rules. They're violating their jurisdiction, all kinds of stuff. But anyway, so when we get right down to the levels of government, each level has some responsibility. If we start with the state, the city, that's the police department, the fire department, those things in that community. The state doesn't have a police department to monitor anything that goes on in the city. The county doesn't have a police department to monitor anything that goes on in the city. That's the city responsibility, and it should stay there. And don't do away with it. They say, well, brutality of police. Well, don't forget brutality of criminals. Brutality of criminals are controlled by the police, and the police are not brutal. Some err, but they are not brutal. By and large, those are fine, fine people, and they're risking their lives to protect us. Let's give them due where it's due. Police departments are a necessary part of our society, absolutely necessary. And don't allow your city and state and places to do away with them. Don't allow. They're trying to do that. I think it's Minneapolis. They're trying to do away with the police department. What stupidity. I can't believe how stupid some of our leaders are. And they don't get replaced. We're going to reelect them again. Yes, sir. Even though they're stupid. Never mind. So the city has those responsibilities. Now the county. County sheriff, he has responsibilities throughout the county. The state has responsibilities, but each of them has their own level. And sometimes they interfere, but you must always remember color of law and the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence. And that will define what these people all have and what they're doing. Just follow the document, the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution, and you will know whether or not the state is violating its rules, whether the county's violating its rules, whether the city's violating its rules. I hope that's succinct enough to get the point across.
It is. And you mentioned state constitutions. Every state has a constitution.
Everyone. Yes.
And it's my understanding that every state constitution obviously has to follow the federal the Constitution of the United States. It has to be consistent with, right?
For a Republican form of government,
right.
And they're encouraged to have the Bill of Rights because they swear an oath to the Bill of Rights when they swear an oath to the Constitution. So they should have the Bill of Rights in their Constitution also.
All right. I want to make sure because the question that Donna asked, it led me to think of some other kind of questions about that. Okay. All right. She asked this, and again, she writes, it gets a bit confusing with so many branches of entities and such. So, and I understand that, but I think you clarified much of that. So, as a citizen, me as a citizen of Pennsylvania, for example, as a resident of Pennsylvania, but a citizen of the United States. Am I
a citizen of Pennsylvania too? Citizen of Pennsylvania too.
That's a correct term.
And the citizenship of Pennsylvania is superior to your citizenship of the U.S.
That was going to be my question. Okay, I wanted to make sure in my mind, about that. So, and that applies to every state. If you're a citizen of Ohio, you'd be a citizen of Ohio first, and then I got you. All right. So. Okay.
By the way, can I just take a minute here now, Doug, and let's elaborate on what I just said about citizens
Please.
Of the United States.
For sure.
The United States, through the Supreme Court and the federal government, Congress, have constantly, consistently violated states' rights. And all they do is wring their hands. But you know, they have a right. Remember, you are a citizen of the state in which you live. You need to insist that the legislator and governor of your state holds up the rights of the Constitution and protects you from the federal government. You need to insist on that. So let's point right directly at the 16th Amendment, which everybody should know precisely because you pay money to it every year. Our wealth is transferred to the federal government because of the 16th Amendment. Is the 16th Amendment constitutional? The 16th Amendment violates the law of contracts, because it changed the Constitution document. Therefore, it is not legal. Well, someone will say, but it was ratified. That makes it legal. No, that doesn't make it legal. And the reason we can say that is because they took it to the Supreme Court. And in 1916, the Supreme Court decided it was constitutional outside of their authority, because they don't have authority to make that kind of a decision either. But the point I'm making here is it was up for grabs until that moment. And then that moment, the Supreme Court violated its oath of office, and it now has saddled us with that 16th Amendment, which is stifling our wealth. It's stifling our country. Actually stifling. You know, if every time you watch, the taxes on the 16th Amendment are lessened, the community prospers more than it did before. If you want to stifle the prosperity of a community, increase taxes on the people. You want to have it grow, take away taxes on the people. Okay. The 16th Amendment is unconstitutional because it changes the laws of the contract, and the laws of contract stand. So, since it's unconstitutional, the state you're a citizen of, you are a citizen of the state, the state legislature should say, I'm sorry, federal government, we're outlawing using the 10th Amendment and our oath of office to the Constitution, we are outlawing the IRS in our state. No one in our state will be allowed to fill out a 1040 again. It's against the law. You want taxes from our state, you tax us directly, as the Constitution says. Period. We will not allow them to do that any longer. The state can do that. You can't do it, but the state can do it. They'll throw you in jail if you do it, but they can't throw the state in jail if the state does it. And if the state does it, the state will back up. They can't throw you in jail for either. See? So the 16th Amendment can be solved if every state understood its sovereignty, state sovereignty, and did what the Constitution says. Follow the Constitution. The 16th Amendment is unconstitutional. The Supreme Court didn't make it that way. They, nine people that stood up in black robes said, we're going to take the money from the people and it's okay. It isn't okay. If you go in the Saving the Constitution to Article 16, I'm going to read it. The 16th Amendment and Saving the Constitution. Hang on just a minute. I will find it. That's the second amendment. We don't want to read that one today.
All right. You know what, folks? If you have the book, let's do it together. All right.
Yes, it's right here on page 243.
All right.
16th Amendment, page 243. I'm reading out of the Keep It book because it has a binding that I can just lay flat. Now, it lists the amendment first. First thing, page 243, it lists the actual amendment itself, which says, I'm going to read it, the Congress shall have power to lay and collect taxes on incomes from whatever source derived without apportionment among the several states and without regard to any census or enumeration. They just outlawed several paragraphs of the Constitution. So obviously it's unconstitutional. So I wrote one. Now I did write just one word too many. Anyway, this is what I say this book said, this amendment really says. This is written on page 244, right at the top of 244. The Congress shall have power to lay and collect taxes on incomes from whatever source derived, no matter what the Constitution of the United States says. Now that's what the amendment really says. In other words, the Congress can throw out the Constitution. That's what that amendment says.
Mm.
The state should look at that and say, that's not right. We are a sovereign state. We're not going to pay. Our citizens are not going to pay that. Done. And it is. That's the legal right of the state. 10th Amendment. Under the laws of the 10th Amendment, that's gone. Do the same thing with the 17th Amendment.
Which is the
Article 5. Senators. The senators.
Senators,
that's the one,
right,
about the senators.
Yep.
The state could say, I'm sorry, Article 5 says that the Senate cannot lose, that the state cannot lose its power in the Senate. Says it? We don't consent to that. We outlaw that. We are going to appoint our senators. Our legislatures from this day forth will appoint the senators, and we will review the work of the senators that are there now. And if it's not constitutional, we will replace them. The state has that power. If they just get off their dimes and do it. They swore an oath to the Constitution. Every one of them did. Article 6 says they have to support it. To support it, you must follow what it says. What it says is, Article 5, the Senate cannot lose, states cannot lose their representation in the Senate. Last sentence. So, Article 1, all throughout it says how the Senate's going to be manned and what they're going to do and all that kind of stuff. Well, if Article 1 says it and Article 5 says it, then how can Amendment 16 not say it? Article 16 says, nope, can't do that. We're not going to do that any longer. So they took that right away from us and the states. They don't have the right to do that. The state should stand up on its hind legs and say, we are nullifying. That's the word, nullifying the 17th Amendment. It is not constitutional. It does not follow the rules of the contract of law. We will not have that any longer. And our guys are going to be appointed. There will be no more popular elections for senators in our state. And they have that power. They are a sovereign entity. They have that power. Don't forget, when the Declaration of Independence was signed, there were 13 sovereign entities in the geographical space called America, or United States today. They were sovereign entities. They did not give up their sovereignty because they established the federal government. They did not give up their sovereignty. They only gave up a few of their powers. A few of their powers. The states are the parent. The states are in charge. The states are sovereign entities. The states do not have to do what the federal government says if it violates the Declaration of Independence or the Constitution. Either one. They don't have to do it. They can nullify everything. I've watched senators wring their hands. How can we get our Senate seats back? How can we do it? This is senators in the state, by the way. Legislature in the state. There were senators at the time. They were wringing their hands. How can they get the 17th Amendment nullified? How can we do it? On and on and on. Read the blooming document you swore to uphold. It says right in it that the Fifth Amendment, the Article 5, we could read Article 5. I have to find it. We can read Article 5 here in just a second. There's Article 6. There's Article 5. There it is. I'm going to read the very, very last phrase. The state, no state without its consent shall be deprived of its equal suffrage in the Senate. No state shall lose its representation in the Senate. So they ratified it. Nope, we're going to renege on that ratification. We are not going to consent. We're going to take that back. They can do it if they just would get some backbone.
Wow. How important is it, folks, to hear these words today, given our present course and position and course in history, American history? Think about this. Again, this is not the tweet that flashes on your news feed or your Twitter feed. This is educational. This is what you need, the ammunition that you need to understand in order to fight and take back our country. States' rights.
That's right.
States' rights.
That is exactly right. The reason this book is so important, it doesn't just talk about the Constitution itself and define what's going on. It explains where the errors are and how you can correct them. The conclusion of this book, the conclusion on page whatever it is, the conclusion specifies steps to get your life back from the federal government. And those steps include the nullification of the 16th Amendment, the 17th Amendment. It doesn't include BLM and Forestry Service. I didn't add everything we should fix, but that's the next thing you should get. Western states have got to get this BLM out of here. The Western states are being crucified by it. The only reason the Eastern states aren't is because the Eastern states were already, the people already owned the land. But in the West, aha, we'll get that. And the government owns 70 to 80% of the lands in the Western states. And they dictate what's to be done on those lands. But they got no permission. They just took it. Clinton stood on the south rim of the Grand Canyon and took 100 million acres from the state of Utah. I'm going to take it right now. And Hatch stood right and said, okay. And that's all that happened. Our businesses were destroyed. The use of the lands were destroyed. Everything was destroyed because he said that on the south rim of the Grand Canyon, and nobody in our state stood up for our sovereignty. Nobody.
Wow. And of course, you've got the, and I don't know how many people know this about the UN control over lands here in the United States. The biodiversity project.
They have hundreds of heritage sites all over the world.
Right.
And they have about 20 or 30 in the United States. And all of them are our historic monuments. The Statue of Liberty, Statue of the Yellowstone, the parks, all throughout our country. They're all listed, by the way. Every one of them in our country is listed in the book, the Liberty series.
That's right.
Every one that we've lost is listed.
Yep. I was looking at the other day.
These are full of things. These books are just full of stuff.
Believe me, they are. And folks, we're talking about the Liberty series in this case, in this segment here, talking about the Liberty series. You can find that at provisinstitute.com. And I'm telling you something, the information contained in these books, historical fact, brings you to the present. And really, if we don't do something, what the future would look like. And if we do something, what the future could look like. And I think that it's important for everyone to really get into it. And some people say, well, I can't afford all these books. Hey, volume 1, volume 6. But I urge everyone to get that and everyone in between. So go to provisinstitute.com. The link's going to be in the program description box for your ease.
I say this, and I've said it before. Volume 1 and volume 6 are the two most important, because volume 1 gives a snippet of all the things, and volume 6 goes into how to get it back.
That's right.
Okay? But volume 2 through 5 give all the details that we've been talking about. And if you don't know the details, you won't know that Yellowstone Park is no longer a part of our country. You won't know that. You've got to have details.
You do.
Alaska. Bunches of Alaska is gone.
Yeah, you know, I did not realize that the how much, I guess would be the better statement, of Alaska has been ceded over to, under the auspices of the Biodiversity Project, to the UN. So I'm just thinking out loud now, because I hear people saying, well, you know, taking away the police departments, it's a precursor for the UN to come in and United Nations troops. So here's my question. Since the UN has control over the Statue of Liberty, for example, the land that the statue sets on and the statue, could they bring over the UN? Could the UN come in and just put troops on that land, that island?
And shut it down? Yes, they could.
That's what I thought.
Heritage sites?
Yeah.
Heritage sites are controlled by the United Nations. We deeded them to them, by the way.
Deeded them?
Yes, they belong. They belong to them. We've given them away. Volume? I don't remember which volume it's in. Sorry. Can't remember.
I'm not sure I remember. Wow, okay.
There's so much. I can't remember all of it. I just know that it's there.
So
the list is there.
For what purpose did that happen?
Because the UN wanted it?
If I was the president, I'd have a hard time giving away any land of the United States that doesn't belong to me. It belongs to the people. And certainly, I'm trying to think of a reason I would do that. I can't think of a valid reason, legitimate reason.
We just do it. There's no valid reason that we support the UN either.
True.
If we didn't support the UN, it would close tomorrow. We didn't send them money, it would close tomorrow. All you have to do is stop sending them money. It's done. Because the other world governments aren't. Let's take back the land that it sits on. Go live somewhere else. We don't want you here anymore. We have the right to do that, you know. We are sovereign in this country. Besides, the United Nations is unconstitutional because it doesn't follow Article 6. Sorry.
No,
it's a treaty that doesn't follow the Constitution or the laws of the land. Therefore, it's null and void, and we should just shut it down and not pay for it, and that would shut it down. And tell them they're persona non grata, send all their ambassadors home. That's what we should do. If they want to have one, put it up in Brussels.
I'd like to see President Trump do that. Could he do that unilaterally?
It was passed by Congress as a law. But he could take it out of the budget.
That's true.
So he can't unilaterally take the UN out of the country, but he can get it out of the budget.
That's true.
In other words, even if let's say the Congress won't let him take it out of the budget, just don't write the check. Treasury Department writes the checks. Treasury Department's under the Executive Department. Just don't write the check.
See how long that would last.
It's possible to do stuff. Say, oh, we don't mind. You can stay if you want, but we're not paying for it. Have a nice day.
That would be a pleasure to see that happen. Very
interesting. It was passed by Congress in 46. So, you know, the president can't with an executive order do a thing about it. Congress can, but they won't because, well, you know why they won't. They don't know anything like that.
Sure.
But anyway, the president can say to the Treasury Department, they won't write the check. Go ahead, stay if you want. We won't write the check. Well, they'll dissolve. They can't stay. They can't afford it. They haven't got any money. We don't write the check. There won't be enough money to run it.
And that's true. That's true on so many fronts and so many organizations, domestically and internationally. If we didn't fund them, they wouldn't exist. They would cease to exist because they couldn't afford to exist. So very
now,
interesting.
Go ahead. Here's a very important point about the UN. By the way, that's pointed out in these books too. When I talk about the UN, this is also pointed out. The UN has a mission statement, and it's a beautifully written document. My, oh my, it is the epitome of a utopia. Oh my, so nice. But they don't do it. It's just written there for words, just so they can point to it. They don't ever do it. They're the causer of most of these wars, and they go in and rape and pillage the villages that they go to sometimes in Africa. Oh, they're, it's a terrible organization, but all that's swept under the rug, so we don't know it. But it does not follow the mission statement that it's got. UNESCO doesn't follow the mission statement. They use the words and they twist them to control our lives. Don't pay for it. It won't exist. And we need to. Don't read the mission statement and think that's what's happening. Those are just words to fool the gullible.
Let that sink in, folks. Seriously. You're right. Let that sink in.
And we're being very gullible. And we're paying for it. We pay for a lot of people to come and destroy our country. We are not very intelligent as a group. Actually, I'm going to say that differently. The people can't do anything about it because they won't do anything about the government. The government does it. Ah, did I say the people can't do anything about it because they won't do anything about the government? I did, didn't I?
Yep.
But the reverse of that is the people can do anything they want if they would take care of the government.
You know, I hope that's the case. I like to look at things like we can still make a difference, and I know you would not be doing what you do. You'd be out having a good time somewhere, instead of doing, committing so much time and effort and energy into doing what you do if you didn't think that it was possible to save our republic and save our constitution. So, we can do this, right? I mean, I don't want to leave people thinking there's nothing we can do. We can't fight City Hall. That statement. We can. Yeah, we can. And we can win, too.
Yeah. A group of people, if they got together, even without an election, a group of people in the city said, we don't want that. They go down to the city hall and said, we won't put up with this. If enough people did that, the city would change its mind.
Yeah.
Because they want to be reelected, you see, guys. That's the key. They want to be reelected. And they think we won't remember. Clean house. Get that broom and clean house. I have a little thing that I say. This may not apply all the time, but here's my sentence. Never elect an incumbent.
I agree on that. I agree on that. I really do.
Never.
Yeah.
Yeah. Never. Give somebody else a chance to do well. And if they don't do right, never elect an incumbent. Now, obviously, that's really not true because there will be some incumbents that will do what we want. So they should be treasured.
Well,
but there are not very many of them.
Exactly.
Never elected an incumbent.
Yeah. I mean, these are statements that are broad strokes, But I agree, you know, when you say never realize, never elect again in the incumbent, pretty much that when you look at Pelosi, well, she's been in there, what, 40 some years?
Oh, yeah, she's been there. It's a career. It's her whole life. She's a millionaire because of us.
Right.
She's a millionaire as she works to destroy our country. Because she's a Speaker of the House, she gets more money. Because she's been the Speaker of the House, she gets more money. She gets money because she's there. She gets money in seniority. She's going to have $100 million of our money before she's done.
Yeah.
And her only goal is to destroy our country. Her only goal is to destroy our country.
Exactly. Exactly. And yeah, it's very evident, folks. We only have about 8 minutes, 9 minutes left, Dr. Proctor. I feel like I've done
it. I don't know how this happens.
What's that?
I don't know how this goes by so quickly.
I don't either. I'm serious. I know I took a lot of time at the beginning, more time than I should have, but, you know, the fact is this. I do want to give you the chance to close this out because, you've got so much information and not only information, but inspiration. And I appreciate that. And I get emails every day saying, you know, people look forward to you coming on and talking and, getting so much out of what you provide to our viewers and listeners. So close this out however you'd like and however you see fit, given the time period we're in. Cause you know what? We could be sitting together a week from now and things could be totally different. So.
Yep. Yes. Today, this time today, I'd like to talk a little bit about what's going on in the economy. Specifically, I want to talk about these bills and these bailouts the federal government is doing. Folks, we are on the road to disaster. Now, there's two issues here. One, I'm not going to not accept the checks they're going to send to me, because if I don't, I'll not have that money. But more than that, my check that they take from me won't stop the problem, because everyone will be taking those checks. We've got to stop the problem at the federal government level. They're lining us up to destroy, absolutely destroy our Constitution. Our economy. Absolutely destroy our economy. If any of you want to know what it's going to look like, I would ask you to get into the internet. And I would ask you to search for life in Germany in the early 1920s during their depression time, during their inflation time. Just look at that. Search through and read what happened to Germany in the early 1920s. Just read that. It'll be an eye opener. That will tell you what's coming to us. If the government prints the money that they're saying they're going to print, if they print the next $1,200 for every citizen, if they begin to print that basic income of $2,000 a person, if they begin to print that, they begin to really do that, the trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars are going to destroy our economy. You want to know what it's going to be like? Read, study what happened to Germany in the early 1920s. The reason that happened in Germany in the early 1920s is because of the Treaty of Versailles. The German economy could not ever do the reparations that were required by the Treaty of Versailles. They were written in marks, so the government just printed money to do those reparations. And that money destroyed the German economy, but it did get them out from underneath the obligations of the Treaty of Versailles. There's the reason. But I want you to look at what happened because of all that printing of money. I have stamps. And a stamp collection that visually shows this. They had postage stamps at, you know, 2 or 3 marks to mail a letter. By the time that inflation period stopped, those same letters had to have 2 or 3 billion marks to mail that same letter. People had to be paid every twice a day, in the morning and in the afternoon, because if they didn't get it in the morning, they couldn't afford it at night. You've got to understand what happened to Germany in the 20s and then visualize that here and don't think it could never happen. We're on the cusp of it right now. Go look at what happened to Germany and then say to yourself, do I want to live like that? Do I want that to happen? It's kind of a joke that reigns around. Somebody came up and they were carrying their money in a wheelbarrow down to wherever they were going, in a wheelbarrow, and the villains came along and threw out the money and stole the wheelbarrow. Because the money was worthless. Absolutely worthless. Wheelbarrow's full of it. I was in Brazil for several years. During the time I was in Brazil, I discovered their biggest note was 1,000 cruzeiros. That sounds like a lot, doesn't it? 1,000. Their inflation that they had during that period of the 1960s, early 60s, late 50s and early 60s, people would get their 1,000 lira notes and they would bind them in an elastic band in sets of 100. No, sets of 10. They would bind them in sets of 10. And then they would take a cardboard box filled with those sets of 10 down to do something. That's what happened with those people. While I was there, the value went from 250 cruzeiros to the dollar to 450 cruzeiros to the dollar. That's doubling. That means that everything doubled. I was there for 2.5 years. Everything doubled. And that wasn't serious inflation. That was just bad, bad inflation. Serious inflation meant that it would have gone from from 250 cruzeiros to dollar to 10,000 cruzeiros per dollar, or 20,000 cruzeiros per dollar, or 100,000 cruzeiros per dollar. All that means is that people have to suffer. I would take a dollar and get 200,000 cruzeiros. I could do what I wanted, but they can't do that. They have to earn it. So they have to have a job that will pay them 200,000 cruzeiros. That used to be only 250. That's what inflation does. That's called hyperinflation. And it starts with the government printing money they shouldn't print. They already started it with all this CARE stuff that they did. How many trillion dollars did they set up to spend in just those few bills? And they're ready to do more. And every time they do it, it comes back to roost on you and I, because our food, our clothes, our homes, our everything will double in price. Not value. Well, value, I don't know what the value is. The value is the home. But the price of that value, or the cost of that value, will double. And you won't be able to live there. Your rent will go up thousands and thousands of times. Instead of paying $1,000 a month, you'll pay $100,000 a month. It'll never happen here. It's happened in Germany. Go read it. Go study Germany, early 1920s. It came about because of the Treaty of Versailles. Ours is coming about because of the government of COVID-19. That's why ours is coming about. That will be the point. January 2020, January 2020, when this COVID-19 stuff started, people will look back and say, that's when our country went to pot. That's when we lost our money. That's when we lost our value. That's when that inflation started. January of 2020. And you can all look back and say, I remember that. I was there. I saw it happen. And I did nothing about it.
What a closing statement. If this was a court of law, that would be just a tremendous closing argument. And I look at it that way as well. Wow. And you've written books on economics, bathroom economics is one of them, easily understood economics. I can show it right here. Folks, it's more than just saving the Constitution, although the Constitution is the backbone. Easily understood economics. Boy, you want a good textbook. And the other book as well about it contains the new the different Monopoly game. I've got that as well, and that's it's fun.
It takes a long time to play that game, by the way. Tested it. I had a big table, and I tested it with 8 people. It took me a long, long time to test the game. The rules are there.
Yep. Yeah. We actually had a little family gathering about a month ago. And we did that. Didn't finish because, but we got the idea. So I want to thank you so very much for your graciousness with your time and information. I think our audience is better for it. I know I am, and I appreciate you. I really do. God bless.
I appreciate the comments. Next Wednesday, we'll do it again.
Right on. All right. Folks, I'm out of time. Have a great night. May God bless each and every one of you. Stay safe. Good night.